This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Dr. Nove, and I'm here at the top of this episode to give you a slight production note. So, I have not interviewed anyone in about, let's say, 6 to 8 months. I think that's about right. And I set up everything for this week's interview and accidentally crossed a couple of wires. Long story short, while Seth's audio sounds fine, I accidentally recorded myself on my computer's microphone instead of this condenser microphone, which is in front of me right now, making my voice sound all sexy-like and warm. The computer and I... Shut the fuck up, Mr. Chesterfield. Mr. Chesterfield's also here at the... No, stop yelling at the people. He's here to apologize. He's very, very sorry for ruining your episode. I'm going to do what that guy on Twitter said. I'm going to throw you out the goddamn window. Enjoy.
ProWrestleShop.com, your only source for authentic ProWrestle merch straight from Japan. Translation extraordinaire Yatsumi has helped more than 300 fans all across the world purchase authentic merchandise, and now he's bringing that savings to you. With over 300 items to choose from, ProWrestleShop.com has the largest selection of New Japan and Pro Wrestling merchandise you can't get anywhere else. Shirts, belts, trading cards, DVDs, and more from the biggest stars of Japan, like Tanahashi, Okada, Nakamura, and of course, the Bullet Club. Get them all for the same price you would pay in Japan, with worldwide shipping starting at only $6.99. For the very best in Pro Wrestling merchandise across the world, the choice is clear, ProWrestleShop.com. That's ProWrestleShop.com. ProWrestleShop.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to Lucha of the Hidden Temple for the week of Wednesday, January 28th, 2015. My name is Dr. Nope. It's a pleasure to have your ear again. And this week, we have our very first guest in the Hidden Temple of Lucha-ing. It is none other than Seth Partnow. Welcome to the show, Seth Partnow.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be in the Temple of Lucha-ing with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you Lucha-ing here with me. So, Seth, you do a podcast. Where can people find your podcast? What is the name of your podcast? All that sort of thing.
I mostly talk and write about basketball. My podcast is the Make or Miss Podcast. You can find it on iTunes as the Make or Miss Podcast. Breaking down the NBA on a weekly or so basis.
Okay. So, who do you like going into? I guess we're coming up on the All-Star break here. Who do you like?
Well, so far this year, the two best teams have been the Warriors and the Hawks, and if they by some reason would meet in the finals, it would be a ratings disaster and an amazing display of basketball. So,
do you think Bogut can stay healthy down the stretch?
I mean, can he? Yes. I mean, is he injury prone or is he unlucky? You know, you can argue either way. So who knows? They've had a good enough season that maybe they can rest him, and so that they can give him as best possible chance to be healthy coming down the stretch.
Spates has been really, really productive off of the bench for them too this year.
Yes, it's actually disturbing.
No, dude, his productivity is really nuts.
Yeah, he's just been a guy for his whole career, and all of a sudden he's like the best bench player in the league all of a sudden.
Yeah, Allen Houston off the bench, coming in, dropping 20 in like 18, 20 minutes. It's really nuts. He's been having a great year. So let's get out of the basketball talk before we blow out the entire Voices of Wrestling hive mind. And let's get into Lucha Underground. How did you get into the product in particular? Because you said you're kind of a newcomer.
Yeah, no, I've been a guy who was sort of on and off and back on again as of a couple of years ago. I've watched kind of the main products, the WWE, WCW, and then kind of backfilling in maybe some ECW stuff through the network. And then kind of around Thanksgiving, kind of was becoming dissatisfied with the WWE product. Not, you know, and partially because you can see in like NXT that there are people who work there who know how to do good wrestling. It's just not necessarily translating to the main roster. And so I have kind of been looking around for other kind of action and just kind of sampled some stuff, sampled some TNA, kind of had everything that was that I didn't like about WWE. And then I
they're worse now than ever before. Take it from the former TNA podcaster.
and kind of stumbled on Lucha Underground and kind of had watched the episodes that were kind of on demand, starting with, I guess, episode 7, and was immediately hooked. And it's, you know,
what's the hook for you? I'm interested.
I think though, it's that the whole production is woven together in a way that allows for easy suspension of disbelief in a way that doesn't make you feel the least bit silly. I mean, everything from the set itself, you know, the style in the ring, the cutscenes are great, the vignettes.
My favorite part of the show.
And, you know, the simplicity of the entrances, they still work. Everything, there's nothing that takes you out of the story. And so even when, you know, stuff happens in the ring that's, you know, people flourishing to the crowd and whatever, it makes sense within the universe they've created, and I think that and then on top of that, I mean, it's well booked, so that there's nothing that makes you say, well, that's BS. You know, maybe with there's, I think we'll probably get to when we talk about this week's, is the finish of the Phoenix Mil Muertes match was maybe a little bit like that, but in general they kind of, it seems like they stay away from that's how it ended because that's how we decided it was ending kind of stuff.
Yeah, or just, you know, schmozzy finishes. They don't have that unless, like, in the case of Drago and King Cuerno, they had that schmozzy finish. But it was a big finish in the sense that Drago jumps off of the top of...
He jumps off and
goes through Cuerno, you know, in a table. So, like, yeah, okay, they fought to a draw. That's cool.
Yeah, but you don't have, like, that kind of a draw. Yeah. Like that's a legit, like, okay, these guys are both knocked out. Okay. That's like, it's not a draw because we needed to find a way to not beat either guy. It's a draw because that's even if,
because we're building up to beating that guy next week. In this case, they had like the last man standing match to resolve the feud, but they needed to have the stipulation. And the reason they needed to have the stipulation was because a regular match just couldn't hold this action.
Exactly. And it, so even when they kind of go somewhere to like a non-finish, it's thought out. It's not just I'll throw this up on the wall and figure it out later. It seems like there's a little bit of you know, an episodic through line of planning. This is where we are, this is where we're going, and the stuff that's happened before will make sense when we get to the end, rather than things just being left hanging, like, you know, like Curtis Axel on the ramp at the Royal Rumble.
Oh yeah, whatever happened to that guy?
He's still alive. He's main eventing WrestleMania.
He is? Hell yeah. About time, the Axeman. I like that guy.
Yeah, he's better than perfect.
He's charismatic as shit. So, let's get into this week's episode here. We begin with cage training, and Dario Cueto shows up, and they have a brief exchange. I didn't even write down this exchange because I was busy giggling from the hard zoom when he says, "I'm a machine," which is a line that they are trying so fucking hard to get over. But, like, Cage's delivery of it isn't there for me.
Yeah.
I really like him, though.
I do. He can maybe use a mouthpiece.
Definitely could use a mouth. Like, it's not there in the voice for what should be there. I don't know what should be there, but it's just not there.
I mean, it's kind of, I think with the sideburns and the smirk, it's maybe like, production like this, it can border on the hammy anyway. And it seems like you know him him talking at times is, you know, the other promo they did with him, like, you know, walking through the attempted mugging, not saying anything.
Oh my god! That's just that was amazing.
Yeah, that's just complete badassery. But like, no talking, just hit things.
No
and
premise.
Break on you.
Cage is just walking along outside, and all of a sudden gets accosted by three dudes.
Yeah, and like, no sells a bottle to the head, you know, that was.
Let's hang on to that second one though, because that one is really weird given what the narrative arc of this week's episode was, which is we are firmly moving Cage into the heel column of the roster. If you were split on this guy last week, which the crowd clearly was, and you know, the crowd's going to have their own opinions on things. It is the narrative's job to establish who's the bad guy and who's the good guy. And I think that this episode, or particularly the finish to this week's episode, did a great job doing that. That second vignette where he's beating up random, you know, strangers accosting him on the street, I didn't think did a good job. But this first one did. And I think that we've established a bit of Cage not being patient. He's greedy. He wants it now and he's entitled.
You talked about it last week that he, you know, was about to do something bad with Vampiro when Vampiro got up in his face, you know, last week. So,
but that was also like under the context of Vampiro just sort of manically snapped on him. I think you're a punk, man. I don't know what you'd do in that context if you're Cage.
I think you just you glower and crack your knuckles menacingly.
Yeah, yeah. People say it ain't happening, man. You're getting that whole interview stuck in my head again now.
I'm sorry.
Me too. not as sorry as I was watching this first match, though. This was a big bummer. So one of the major storylines that we have had since I think week two has been Mil Muertes, this mysterious figure who is extremely dominant, was booked and considered to be, you know, kind of the top monster heel in the company. I saw on Reddit someone did like a power rankings chart or whatever, and they had Mil Muertes as the A-plus guy in the roster rankings. And this week did him no favors. Actually, the last month has done him no favors ever since we come back from break. He lost in kind of a, you know, an interesting way in Aztec Warfare. And since then, he's been sort of a non-entity on the screen. They haven't advanced his relationship between Katrina and himself. And this week...
Can I break in there for a second?
Sure.
You're talking about a guy who's you know, the crowd is split on. I mean, it was I... imagining hearing like Lick of Death chants.
No, those were definitely there, dude. Like there are people saying Mil Muertes. Like people like this guy, and all he does is beat people up old school WCW squash match style. You know, 6 minutes of guy, or 6 to 5, 4 minutes, guy tries to get some offense in, not very impressive, ends up getting wrecked.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we kind of saw a little bit of that, but then, like, all of a sudden, roll-up loss.
And this is so weird. So let's go through, I've got like four notes here. So, one, Matt Stryker decided to highlight Mil Muertes' gut, and I'm only bringing this up because he spent, like, dude, he was trying to put the gut over as, like, a thing that made him better. Like, all of his anger wells up from the gut. I'm like, dude, like, we get it. Mill's not necessarily in, like, tip-top cardio shape right now. that's not helping anyone. Phoenix kicked out from the spear. The spear had been put over in previous episodes as sort of Mil Muertes' finishing move, so that was notable.
In the moment, it was surprising because that, I mean, like... I don't know. I felt like the window shake in my house when he came, because it's just so stiff.
Dude, Mill's pretty stiff with most everything other than his working punch is pretty stiff.
Yeah, no, that's like there's at least three times in the match where I was like, ooh, just and that was, I think that was the third one. And then he kicks out from it, which, you know, again, as I think you're getting to, doesn't necessarily do him any favors in terms of being presented as this, you know, this monster of a thousand ways to kill you.
Well, yeah, particularly when this was his heretofore dominant way to kill you. It sort of has to be like, if that doesn't work, then he'll have to innovate some new way that he, you know, destroys people, because now someone's kicked out of the spear. That's problematic, too. The other big problem in this is clearly the narrative they were trying to tell in this match, and the commentary had notes on, is that Matt Stryker says the crowd's firmly behind Phoenix. And this is right as we have like a "Let's go Phoenix, Phoenix sucks" chant.
Yeah.
You know, Phoenix isn't even over on his own merits, and Mill's actually kind of popular. So, like, this pairing was really weird, and then this finish was really weird. Do you have anything you want to get in before we get into that finish?
I mean, just part of it is the reason why the especially, like, the kickouts and stuff like that. I see what they're going for with, you know, he's rising from the ashes and so on and so forth. But he wasn't, like, he's been more impressive in the past. He just, he was, I want
to say,
sluggish.
They have no chemistry. These guys didn't have good chemistry, and I didn't think Cage and Puma had particularly good chemistry either.
No, I think that's I would agree with that, but we'll get to that. But it was not just the chemistry, but he just seemed sluggish at times with a lot of his a lot of the stuff around the corners and stuff like that. It just seemed slow, and all right, he's going to outquick him, but he's not actually moving very fast. Maybe that was, you know, they picked some unfortunate camera angles for him or something like that. But that was, I think, contributed to, I think if he's moving like wicked quick all over the place, then all right, you can, you know, it's strength versus speed. And he's taken some shots, but he's gotten out of the way of some others kind of thing. And I didn't necessarily play like that.
Phoenix is really an odd talent in the sense that I don't know what this company has in terms of a vision for him. It seems like they're hot on him one week, they're cold on him next week. This week, they're clearly really hot on him, because Phoenix is going to win this match over Mil Muertes, handing Mil Muertes his first loss on a small package that occurs after Mil Muertes successfully superplexes Phoenix from the top ropes. This apparently doesn't faze Phoenix at all, and is plenty to jar Mil Muertes. Like, none of this made any sense to me. It was such a weird finish.
And again, I think that if the work in the rest of the match had, you know, presented it, if he had been better able to present himself as this kind of quick, wily, you know, adversary, then that's the trick up a sleeve, you know, roll up, let me get out of here. And so, like, I think that's what they were going for, because, you know, clearly, you know, they're presenting that he got away with one and he's running away.
Right. You know what should have happened? Drago did a really neat pinning combination on one of the earlier episodes that I think he's starting to work in as a regular spot. I don't even know how to describe it, but I think if you're going to win like this, it's got to be something more convincing than a small package. It makes Mil Muertes look stupid that he got rolled up on a small package, whereas it would look like you were maybe sneaking one out if you had some fancy bridging combination type.
Yeah.
Move.
No, I think I agree with that also.
You know, it's a little thing, but I think it makes a big difference in this case. So Mil is just adrift right now, and Phoenix moves up the card a lot, so you may get Phoenix Puma 3, the match you may watch. I didn't dislike the last one, but like, I don't know that I needed to see another one with him anytime soon.
I'm not sure who I'd like to see Puma against most. I mean, I think obviously we're gonna see him against Cage a few more times, at least once more. But you know, then there's the other thing that's gonna happen is when I guess I'm getting way ahead of ourselves. But I mean, obviously, since they're presenting Conan as you know, heel manager, and Puma isn't.
Well, he's Shades of Grey manager right now. Yeah. I think especially at the end of this week's episode, he's definitely somewhere very much in that squishy middle. I'm looking forward to Puma and King Cuerno. I think that has the ability to be like a really, really great feud.
That's a good call.
Yeah, and they did a great job setting that all up next week. So let's move to the six-man, because I think we can move through the six-man pretty fast. The Crew versus our babyface squadron of Argenis.
Jobbers.
Yeah, of the jobbers. They were happy to be there, guys. There was a really rad moonsault from, I believe, Superfly. Matt Stryker during this match went into an extended passage of quoting Matthew. The Book of Matthew, that's right, guys, the Bible. What the fuck? And it went on way long. It went on way longer than I thought it was going to. There was this really, really cool tower plancha that Aerostar and Argenis did at one point. And the Crew eventually did their little spot that I'm referring to as the mugging, where they put someone in the corner like you're going to do the Bronco Buster, and then one comes in from one diagonal, the other one comes in from across the ring, the other one comes in from another diagonal. We got Cisco. Cisco is a little lost in this match. Did you notice that?
Yeah, no, he definitely, like the other five, seemed like they're working at a little bit of different speed than him.
His rope work, dude. It's like he didn't know which way people were coming off of the ropes or which way they're throwing people off of the ropes, and it was really, really noticeable. And that's like not even usually the stuff that I lock into.
The other thing I noticed about is you know that how many head scissors can we do in one match?
Oh, I know. Seems like the head scissors is one of those moves.
And though, I mean, if there had been one, and then the one like off the top from was it Aerostar onto Cisco?
Yeah, Aerostar. He doesn't quite nail that Frankenstein from the top ropes to out to, but it doesn't matter. It looks so fucking cool.
Yeah, like and then it seems like that this was kind of a kitchen sink match, because they follow that up with another, and I don't remember the exact spot, but right after that they do another big dive and it's just, it's like, all right, this is the match with all the flippies.
It's crazy to see everybody doing everything. And the sad part for these babyface jobbers is that, like, none of this matters. None of these guys got spotlighted in this match. The narrative wasn't really built around this other than, like, this is the Crew just kicking someone's ass.
Yeah, I think it was done better in the Cage's first match, the Eliminator match, when, you know, All three of the baby faces in peril got their big spot, and then they got creamed by Cage, and that made sense and worked well.
Yeah, no, that Cage initial squash match that wasn't quite a squash match, that was great. That was a really good match
with the triple spot with like the big trust fall and the suicide dive like over the turnbuckle. That was amazing. Rewind and watch 10 times in a row on the TVR.
Very, very good. Vampiro says at one point that he likes the guys doing the suplexes. And I'm not sure who he was referring to in this match. Yeah. I'm guessing it was the Crew. I'm guessing. I get lost. So I want to ask you this. I want to stop right here before we get into our main event. You like Vampiro.
I don't want to
paint you as a Vampiro lover unless you want to paint yourself as a Vampiro lover.
I think I'm more talking about the commentary in general, and he's definitely a part of that. But again, as someone who's using this as an antidote to WWE,
the bar is low, is what you're saying.
Well, the bar is low, and kind of what you were talking about is like the sort of the unproduced ad hoc quality to it. To some degree, I enjoy the spontaneity of it, and Vampiro's kind of skater bro vibe just works for me. I know he's talking nonsense a lot of the time, but it's not distracting nonsense, and he's not screaming puppies,
No, it's not Lawler at his worst in the 90s or meandering JBL. JBL, when they first brought him in the booth, he was good, but now JBL is just sort of like, ah, love it. Yeah, a lot of that every week. So, no, I feel you. Oh, no, I was about to say, I feel you. That's a Vampiro type thing. brother.
Yeah, brother. Yeah. Yeah. And maybe part of it is like the first time I watched, I had just like listened to, the first episode I watched, I just listened to Jericho's podcast with JBL, and he's telling Vampiro stories. So it's like, hey, that guy. And so I was kind of predisposed to kind of feel kindly towards him. So I'll like, after listening to your podcast and watching yesterday's episode again, I was like, oh, yeah, that is strange. I think you are right in that there's a difference between, you know, spontaneous commentary and seemingly spontaneous commentary. And the danger with the former is that they don't know where the story's going either, so they're not assisting in telling the story.
Or we end up in the fucking Book of Matthew. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. That's my problem. It's not that I need every line to be scripted. I think they need some bullet points. I think that they need to have some sort of sense of where this match is going. But more importantly, the type of story that this match is trying to tell. And, you know, like, in the case of that six-man that we're just getting out of here, like, let's say you want to, I don't know, spotlight Aerostar. You could have commentary really subtly dropping those hints and doing things throughout the match to be building up Aerostar. So, yeah, they're going to lose. But you have that little seed planted in your head that Aerostar is, oh, maybe he was kind of the standout of the three.
Right, and he even gave, like, Stryker even gave him a chance to do that and was like, you know, you basically like kind of asking who's your man of the match
Vampiro says himself. He puts himself over. He says the commentary or the VIP of the match or the most important player of the match. Jeez Louise. No, you, what were you gonna say?
You know, and then he's like, in his like, I can't pick. So and it's just like, you know,
I don't even know who these guys are, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could almost, I can, like, especially having, like, you know, heard you talk about it, I can imagine, like, Stryker sitting there with his pencil in his hand and just snaps because he's like, come on, man. Like, yeah.
There are so many times where Vampiro just leaves Stryker hanging, and it's just sad. It's sad. But I think that I see an outdoor for all of this. I think I have an answer, and it came to me while I was watching this next segment between Vampiro and Conan. And guys, if you haven't seen this, to quote Vampiro, you couldn't cut the knife with the intensity. This segment was so thickly intense, my friend. No, but after watching this segment, I think that what needs to happen is Vampiro needs to transition into a managerial role opposite of Conan.
Oh, I was thinking we were going to get an old guy loser leaves town match or something.
No. That's the exact opposite thing that I want. I don't need these guys. I don't need these guys on my screen a whole lot. But it would be interesting to have Vampiro as sort of the countervailing force to Conan. And they could both be shades of gray characters, like Conan is right now. And Vampiro's the foil to him. Not that one's good and one's bad. It's just that Conan doesn't like Vampiro and Vampiro doesn't like Conan. And if you get involved with either one of the guys, you know, good things might happen, bad things might happen. It's not entirely clear what's going to happen. But, you know, the one thing you will know is that if you're with Vampiro, you'll be running into Conan's people at some point and vice versa.
Sure. Though, to some extent, I mean, how much are they setting up, you know, Conan as kind of the adversary to Cueto also? I mean,
great about him as a character, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even though he was in the episode three times, he didn't feel especially present in the episode. Maybe it's because he wasn't in the ring at all. But
Conan or Cueto?
Cueto.
No, I actually think that they've been judiciously using Dario Cueto recently, and it's been very, very well done. Like, he's there, his thumbprint's on everything. He, you know, even just establishing the office as this thing that overlooks the ring, so Cueto's always watching the action that's happening in the ring.
I love that so much.
I do, too. It makes a big difference.
That's what I mean about just creating the universe. It's like, in which this all, like, it's of course it's all ridiculous, but within this universe they've created, it all makes sense because here's the temple and there's the office and the two, and that's where we are the whole time. And and while we're here, it all makes sense within the internal logic.
You jarred my memory when you brought up the Cueto, the other appearance. So we now have established this week what the mysterious Asian woman in leather wants.
Yes.
She wants Matanza.
I have no idea
what that is. It's not Metaxa. It has nothing to do with
Pentagon, doesn't it?
I see, last week I thought that she was going to become the manager of Pentagon. I thought that made all the sense in the world. I thought that Pentagon promo at the end of the match sort of alluded to that. But now I really don't know what the hell Pentagon's doing. And he's a guy who I think they want him as a heel, but clearly he gets a split reaction from the crowd.
I mean, there's no way he can be a heel because he's Snake Eyes, like from G.I. Joe. Like he's in black. He's a total badass. Like
he kind of reminds me of a Mortal Kombat character.
Yeah, and he's a scary one, but he's the good scary one. He's
La Parca, only if La Parca was a badass and not kind of funny.
Yeah, he's Arnold in Terminator 2, you know? Obviously, not the same body type, but he's like, his powers could be used for good or for evil, but, you know, just given the all-black presentation and stuff and his moveset, like, there's no way he's not going to be,
embraced by the crowd. I know. I have this issue. And I've always thought it's weird that you have, like, Pentagon, and they keep going, oh, his rival's Octagon. I'm assuming we're going to get an Octagon at some point here. But at this point, not knowing that, it's weird to have never seen Octagon at all.
Then sometime we're gonna move on to Triangle and
I knew you were gonna bring up Triangle Man. Triangle Man. All right, so let's move on to our main event here. Your main event, Cage versus Puma. This match was not one for the ages.
No.
What I would have liked. And what I think could have happened in this match, and what would have been a nice story to tell with Cage, is this theme of impatience. Cage doesn't want to wait his turn. And he's a big guy, he's a strong guy, he's an agile guy, and he has everything that a champion needs except for that one thing, and that one thing should be impatience.
And that was, they were kind of playing on arrogance rather than impatience.
I know. And it's a subtle twist, but I think it's key.
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah, and then, getting ahead of ourselves, but the finish made, storyline-wise, I get why, just how it came about was – the schmozzy DQ, whatever.
Oh, this is so schmozzy. He just like pushes the ref, and the ref is a putz because, like, I mean, they have established in this kayfabe world that the refs are going to kind of let some shit go in Lucha Underground world. It's not hardcore rules, but it's also not, straight, closed fist, that sort of thing either. The refs sort of sit in that in between.
Yeah. And actually, that was kind of emphasized in the six man when, like, for large stretches of the match it was unclear completely who was legal, but that's,
well, I didn't know if they were going to use kind of the classic, if you just go over the top rope then someone else can tag in. There are other issues in that match. The commentary was spotlighted, which is like the baby faces weren't helping their team and the crew were helping their team a whole bunch, and like there wasn't I'm like talking like in pinning combinations, like when you can come in and interfere. Just weird stuff. So this I don't have a lot to say about Cage and Puma, the match itself, other than about this finish, wherein Cage pushes the referee into the ropes, which causes Prince Puma, who was up to do his 630 corkscrew cannonball thing, he ends up racking himself on the top there. And then he gets down, and then Cage low blows Prince Puma and attacks Puma, and then Conan finally comes into the ring. And Cage hits Conan with the belt, which juices Conan, or prompts Conan to juice himself.
Although, even though in general I've been a big fan of the production, they're actually, the shot they're using at the time, you can kind of clearly see him blading.
Okay, dude. I need to go watch.
Because he's already bleeding when he gets up to take the belt.
He's like totally stuck.
It's funny.
So yeah, and this was fucking weird. Cage destroys the belt.
Yeah,
which I don't think did the belt in terms of legitimacy any favors whatsoever.
Yeah, the belt is kind of a weird thing. I kind of enjoyed the briefcase with the 100,000 more than the belt.
Me too. I'm there with you.
Because you know we're not wrestling, we're fighting. So it's a prize money rather than some imaginary like title.
I think Cueto could have gotten away with doing the briefcase full of money thing for like 3 to 4 weeks. I really do. Yeah. I think that they did that first week and that was cool. And then they moved on from that, but I actually think they kept the one briefcase in and of itself. But yeah, I think they could have kept going with that for a minute. This belt, I've been on the fence about. Aztec Warfare is a good match. I didn't necessarily love it as a vehicle for launching this belt. But boy, having just a dude who doesn't respect anything and you're putting over as arrogant, destroy the belt. Like, where does that leave the status of the belt and just, you know, being that kind of champion?
And you know the belt has to have you know it's not especially meaningful if the belt hasn't you know, I mean unless you're counting on the fact that, and I think for probably a good portion of the audience, like
it's really just the leather.
The belt is a thing because it's a thing and people have been conditioned enough. But if within the kayfabe logic, like
it's made from Aztec gold. This is Aztec gold that's mounted on this leather.
Yeah, but it hasn't been, you know, it hasn't really been, you know, venerated. You know, this is like the second title defense. You know, it's not a thing that's been passed around enough, or you know, defended, or bled over enough to have enough meaning for just tearing the belt up to be a dastardly enough act. You know, it's just look how wicked strong I am rather than
I want to make sure that no one is on my side, because this is a problem with Puma. And honestly, what I'm starting to see is a bit of a trend for Lucha Underground. They are having a hard time getting their baby faces strongly over with their home fans. I mean, other than like, you know, like Pimpernella and who people are going to, you know, if you boo them, you got something wrong with you.
Right.
You know, you're going after Masquerita. You're like, no, I hate that little man. Get him out of here. But like, they're having a hard time keeping the Prince Pumas, the Phoenixes of the world over. And meanwhile, you have your heels, or people who are supposed to be heels, like Pentagon, who throughout this series has been nothing but dastardly. He's being embraced. Mil Muertes, I think, is a little more, you know, oblique. Cuerno is at least, you know, definitively disliked, and Drago is definitively liked. But I'd actually argue that Drago is more popular right now with that home crowd than Puma is. It's a bit of a problem.
And it is a bit of a problem, and I wonder how much of that is the reality of the smartness of the fans coming into play there. I mean,
they should know that they're not going to be seeing Drago again anytime soon. Just saying, time to get on board with the home team.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, and I think part of that was the way this match was worked. Again, Puma looked, and I think it was you know, like you said about their bad chemistry, he looked like slower than he has in the past. Like his kicks were deliberate, and it seemed like almost intentionally so, just to make sure that, all right, it's coming, dude. Protect yourself, kind of stuff.
Yeah, everything was just blocky.
Yeah, and you know, I just wonder if that's just a limitation of, even though he's a tremendous, you know, moves tremendously well for being that big. It's still for being that big and doesn't necessarily operate on the same, you know, the same tempo. I mean, even Muertes in other matches seemed like he's been a solid base for that kind of stuff. So, and maybe it's just, you know, maybe it's they'll develop chemistry over some time, because obviously these two are going again at some point.
You know what Brian Cage is like, to bring this thing full circle and tie the basketball and the wrestling together? Brian Cage is kind of like a three-point shooting center. He has a lot of skills, but in this case, that three-point shooting, which I'm using as an analog for, you know, Cage's high-flying ability, it's kind of hard to place and work into the dynamic of everything else, if that makes sense.
You're basically saying that he's Kevin Love.
Yeah.
I can get down with that.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, get Kevin Love the beard back and maybe do something with the sideburns. And, yeah, I see it.
No, he just needs to have those angular sideburns. What I've learned from Cage is that if I want to become a machine, I need to have hair that doesn't stop. on my face, at least. Let's get into show grades here. So what I usually do every week, if you're familiar, is I will, you know, review the show on three different categories here, and those categories, in case you forgot, and maybe I might have been forgetting too. I know one of them is commentary. Start with commentary first.
Go ahead. The first time I watched it, I liked it better than the second time, because between the two, I kind of listened to some of your rants about Vampiro, and I kind of agree. So. I'll give it a C+. I thought that the interview with Puma and Conan was assuming they're going somewhere with that, it really set up the animosity between the two of them well, at the very least.
I did enjoy that, and I think if Vampiro is going to sit there and bash Conan every single week in, week out, that you needed to have a segment like this. And honestly, he needs to have a segment like this with Johnny Mundo. And then he can go back to doing what he's doing with this dynamic of like, oh, you can't trust Conan, man. You can't trust Johnny Mundo. Oh, this guy's got a thing going on. Like, it just establish it. I'm fine with Vampiro being a character. I don't think Stryker needs to be.
No.
But I like the idea of Vampiro actually being a character in the stories.
Yeah, I'm fine with that too. And I think that's, you know, a lot of the why I'm happier with a lot of the nonsense he talks, is that he's part of the ambiance rather than, you know, our Stryker is our narrator, and Vampiro is not. I don't know why this is popping into my mind, probably because I, you know, watched Christmas Carol 1700 times over the holidays, but he's Vampiro is like one of the ghosts rather than Scrooge, and Stryker is Scrooge who's watching, you know, these scenes, if that analogy makes sense.
No, it makes sense. I'll give this week, I don't know that they've moved into C territory, but I'm gonna give them a strong D this week. I think it was passing grade. Yeah. I'll give you a D for diploma, because . I mean, we had the flights of fancy of Stryker quoting scripture. Vampiro did, you know, throw out, you couldn't cut the knife with the intensity. And at one point, Stryker was putting over Mil Muerte's gut. So those are things that probably didn't need to happen.
That's
my take. It's better. It's not as bad as the episode where I was just like, I'm done listening to this. I'm going to just listen to Black Sabbath. We haven't been Black Sabbath bad in a minute. How about the in-ring, though? What did you think of the in-ring this week?
Let me see. Of the episodes I've watched, I kind of have to say this was the worst in-ring. Maybe it's some of it is just getting sort of inured to the a lot of the Lucha stuff, but it just, you know, especially the two, you know, the six man was fine. It was, you know, it was a demolition derby, fine. But the other two, especially considering, you know, the performers in them weren't great. They were good. They were, you know, they would have been, you know, if I'd have watched this on Sunday, they would have been the second and third best matches. Behind the triple threat.
That unbelievable triple threat.
Yeah. Not quite up to, you know, the standard that kind of got me hooked initially. And, you know, part of it, I think, this week is, you know, they a lot of their kind of better performers just weren't on the show. They didn't have Cuerno. They didn't have, you know, Johnny Mundo. They didn't have Pentagon.
And it's tough to keep all those people in rotation. Like, you know, I'm seeing them kind of on like a 2 to 3 week cycle, rotating people in and out. And that's going to be a tricky balancing act for them going forward.
I mean, especially as you kind of they separate into the better and worse performers as they are, I think, a little bit. And, you know, they just, you know, kind of, it was, again, to go with the basketball analogy, we caught them kind of when at the period where the subs were in with maybe one star, you know,
right.
It was a bunch of backups and Puma kind of, you know, in. So I guess in ring, probably C minus.
Yeah, yeah, I've got it at C. I'm tempted to go D this week, which would be my first D since I've started the show. But like, I'll give it a C just for the work that the six guys put in the six man. But like, the Mil Muertes and Phoenix match was nothing to write home about, and frankly, Mil Muertes losing should have been the story in and of itself that week. Like,
sure.
Just a waste of a storyline. That'll get into narrative, and then Cage and Puma went to a non-finish, and both the finishes in the Mil Muertes match and the Cage and Puma match were really unsatisfactory.
I don't know if the result in the, I think we talked about it earlier, but the result in the main event was unsatisfactory.
No, no,
I
mean, the result, the finish.
The result was like exactly like doing a non-finish there was fine. Just like that was a very, you know, very ham-handed way of going about that. I don't know.
Like, yeah.
I feel like there's like, you know, maybe like, you know, something happens. Conan waves the cane at him. He grabs the cane away from Conan and hits Puma with it or something like that. Like that. All right. That's, you know, that's a better non-finish than, you know, ref bump crotch shot.
And then we turned Conan into a face here at the end, which was weird. It was just weird to have Conan move so heavily onto the baby face side of the ledger here. And I guess it could be, I was protecting Puma. And I guess you could also use this at some point to, you know, when you want to confuse Puma's loyalties, Conan can be like, dude, I took a belt shot to the head for you.
Yeah, I bled for you.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that there's going to be some payoff for that down the line. The Mil Muertes and Phoenix thing didn't do anything at all for me. So, yeah, dude, I'll give the in-ring a C. Let's do narrative. What did you think of the narrative advancement this week? Kind of all over the place here.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's kind of the narrative advancement with the first one. It's hard to disentangle that from the work. I think with what they were going for, if it had been a better worked match, it would have resonated more. But it since it wasn't, it didn't. The six man was kind of whatever.
Narrative free.
Yeah, and then other than, you know, continuing to, you know, put the crew over as a force to be reckoned with, and
the Shield they are not.
Yeah, for better or worse.
The Shield they most definitely are not.
But believe that. Sorry, I think I just made anyone listening in a car drive off.
How does Roman Reigns keep coming up on this fucking show?
I don't know, because it's all anyone can talk about right now.
No, shit. I'm so glad we managed to avoid it.
Yeah. You know, and again, the narrative where it's going with the main event made sense. It was, you know, aside from the belt stuff, which was, yeah, bad. It was okay. I mean, it moved the storyline along, and I guess the highlight of the narrative was the last vignette with
Matanza. I'm thinking now that Matanza is the person that Dario Cueto was talking about when he was holding the belt the first time and said, "You can't touch this." And we like we never saw that dude. It was just the week before Aztec Warfare and before they went on their like mid-season break. They tease Cueto talking to somebody who we don't ever see pictured and is never named. And now it's making me think, especially the way Cueto did his reactions and everything to her, which were like, he was lying to her. He was giving her those type of cells.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that that's where we're going with this. He's got Matanza in the roster. I'm looking forward to seeing where that goes. And it is good. I guess if you need to get rid of Mil Muertes to clear up room for this Matanza character, so be it. But again, dump it into somebody who matters, and Phoenix is just like the wrong guy to do that.
Yeah, I mean, and if that's, and especially that way, that's not enough finality to get rid of someone who's been.
Yeah, Phoenix did do like a move from the top rope, which almost seems sort of requisite in this type of scenario.
Yeah. So I don't know. I probably a C on the narrative, and it's helped a lot by kind of the Vampiro Conan angle and you know that last vignette, which is at least, you know, is something that's like, ooh, what's going to happen next week now?
Yeah. So we have the Cage angle this week. I think that they've missed the story with Cage, which needs to be as impatient. So and I like the first vignette. The second vignette, I think, didn't do them any good at all, where they have him just beating up, where he just beats up three guys and looks like a badass, and the three guys are cheating, and there's three of them. Like, how is Cage not the good guy in this scenario?
Well, you don't know. You don't know why he was there.
I just raped all your mothers.
Let me just like, you know, backdrop you into this flatbed here.
He walks up and just belly to belly suplexes one of them. They're like, wait a second, that's my friend.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know. Just and also, like, so much in that was amazing though. Like you know.
Oh yeah, that was
let's
sweet.
Put it this way. It was very on brand with El Rey, I'll put it that way. With you know, it coming out of a commercial for, like, you know, Five Fingers of Death into into that you know vignette was, yes you know your audience here at least.
I haven't read Lance's review yet, but given that he liked it when Johnny Mundo said "chillax, bro" to Dario Cueto, I'm guessing that this Brian Cage vignette was right up his alley.
Yeah.
Either ironically or not ironically at all.
It didn't make sense, but it was awesome.
So, like, ultimately, I don't really care, especially with wrestling. It's like, so much of wrestling doesn't make sense, but if it's awesome, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The six-man didn't do anything to advance the narrative. Vamp and Conan, I liked it. I mean, ultimately, this is a vignette that needed to happen, so I thought that was good. Cage and Puma, you know, the match sucked, but I think making sure that Cage is a bad guy, probably important in all of this because the crowd was split on him. So I'm gonna give it a low B, but I'm gonna give, for the stories that they had to tell this week, that they were tasked to tell this week, they told those stories well.
Yeah, that's fair. But you know, you talked about making Cage a bad guy. I actually, we're jumping all over the place here, but I wanted to, one other thing that I did not like was, so much of this, why this show is good is it's as an antidote, and then having Cage looking the way he does, bust out the F5. I mean, you know,
it's not that he's Brock Lesnar or anything.
It's but a he's not. I mean, you know,
no, but he seriously isn't. He's just a big guy who can do some neat vertical stuff.
Yeah, and B, like, that's you know. You're doing well, you know, when you're differentiating yourself, not copying. And that was, I don't know. Like, I enjoy when you know, Stryker is like, all right, that's a code breaker. That's a 3D. Like, okay, we know these moves, but that's not quite, for some reason, those aren't quite as iconic as kind of the you know, the fireman's carry into the F5 with the, you know, the mean mug at the camera.
Yeah.
So I didn't like that.
No, I mean, but that's like, you know, those are Cage kind of in-ring work issues, and I don't know who was kind of calling the action between him and Puma, but like, that needed work. It didn't seem like anyone was really steering the ship there. That's a whole different thing. But this has been a blast, man. We'll have to get you back on the show here sometime soon.
Yeah, glad to do it. It was fun talking about it, and I feel like I've learned something here today too. So,
well, I feel like I've learned something here today too as well. It's just great to have a nice breakup and get this show back up to the Voice of Wrestling standards, which is, damn it, near an hour. What are you doing? Why even do this show? I've been getting stern emails.
I can't do the 3-hour marathons they do, though.
Oh, my God. I don't know how they do it.
Just talk.
I listen to it, like, all the time. But I'm just always impressed. And they have stuff to talk about. It's not like the content's not there. It's not like Lanza just, you know, gets, you know, lost searching on Google for an hour. They break it down. cover to cover, wall to wall, and that is what makes Voices of Wrestling great. So if you haven't been to voicesofwrestling.com yet today, you should. It'll make Rich happy. It'll make Joe happy. It'll bring the advertisement fairies to the website, and they will shower that website with gifts and charity and blessings, and you would be a good human for doing that. So you should go there. And hey, while you're going there and being a good human, why not get onto iTunes and write Voices of Wrestling a review? You can say, hey, I really like Rich and Joe's show, but that Chris guy's kind of suspect, you know, but hey, all in all, 5 stars. Good job. Keep up the good work, guys. Hey, if you do that, as long as you write 5 stars, I don't care if you bury me. Bury me on iTunes. Just write a review. By all means, you can follow me on Twitter at CHRISNOVEMBRINO. Seth, where can they find you on the Twitter machine?
It's just at Seth Part now, SETHPARTNOW.
Excellent, excellent. And you want to plug the podcast one more time here before we bounce?
Oh, sure. It's the Make or Miss podcast. It's if you like erudite NBA discussion with maybe a nod towards the analytics.